From WBUR, Boston, and NPR, I'm Ray Suarez of Al Jazeera America, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Ethan Hawke had his breakout role in 1989 in the film Dead Poets Society. In his more than 30 years on film, he's been nominated for 4 Academy Awards. He's been a director, written critically acclaimed novels, and now takes on a new acting role as jazz trumpeter and vocalist Chet Baker, a musician known for his music, his James Dean good looks, and his drug habit. The hour, On Point, Ethan Hawke, on playing jazz musician Chet Baker. You can join us on air or online. Ready to see Ethan Hawke play jazz trumpeter and vocalist great Chet Baker? Have any questions about how he got prepared for the role? We're at 800-423-8255, that's 800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York, actor, writer, director Ethan Hawke. His films include Dead Poets Society, Reality Bites, Before Sunrise, Gattaca, Training Day, and Boyhood. His new novel is Rules for a Night, and his new film, which we'll be talking about today, is Born to be Blue, about jazz musician Chet Baker. Ethan Hawke, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ray.
You know, this is a world that I know very little about, I gotta tell you. So, as I was watching you, when I watched the movie, I thought, well, does a project like this find you? Do you find it? At the very beginning, how does it work?
Well, like anything in life, it's sometimes hard to find the beginning, I think. You know, if I go back, I think about Bruce Weber's film, Let's Get Lost. I was graduating high school, and I was first just getting interested in exploring music. You know, you kind of start rifling through your parents' record collection, and different people turn you on to different music. And I started getting interested in jazz right around the time you know, Let's Get Lost came out. Around Midnight had come out. Thelonious Monk, Straight No Chaser had come out. Forest Whitaker was playing Bird. I was watching all these jazz films because, you know, I'm primarily interested in movies. But that turned me on to jazz. And I became a Chet Baker fan, probably for the reason he's a great for people just having an intro to jazz. He's extremely melodic, and he welcomes you. Whereas Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, Sonny Rollins, Coltrane, a lot of those guys have a more sophisticated sound that it takes you a while to really understand exactly what it is they're up to. They're revolutionizing music, and you know, a little bit like punk rock or early rap. It takes you need to know what to listen for, even like with Dylan or something. It takes you a long time to really know how to listen to it. And but Chet doesn't take you long to listen to at all. And so I loved it. And about when I was 28, 29, Richard Linklater and I started developing an idea for a movie about Chet Baker and got real serious about it and had a script and were workshopping it and trying to raise the money to make this movie. And it fell apart and we never made it. And then 15 years went by. And this script showed up at my door. It was finding Chet in his 40s. And I felt like this time that the boat passed around, I was going to jump on and I wasn't going to let it go.
You know, I looked back at old pictures from different decades of what was a tough life. And there were parts of pictures of Chet Baker that I thought, oh, that kind of looks like Ethan Hawke. It was a natural. There was of not necessarily a dead-on resemblance, but a physical harmony, let's say, gave you a chance to inhabit that person credibly, I think.
Well, you know, for me, I think about Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance in Capote, and, you know, there's very little physical resemblance there, and it's still a tremendous performance. For me, I was in a better position because, you know, whatever certain genetic lineage or whatever I was, I could play within the iconography well enough to let the audience suspend imagination easily, I think. But really, you know, imitation isn't really that interesting. I tried to think more about him not as a individual, like a person that, you know, the way that his family and loved ones would consider him, but like a character in a story. It's a little bit like, you know, if you're playing Hamlet, for example, or...
Which you have.
Yes, or, you know, you can, you know, it's a historical figure, but you treat it like a character and you try to, and by that I mean that you try to find where you might intersect with them so that you would have something to say about their experiences that might be personal and private and interesting.
Well, there's the challenge though, isn't it? Because this is a person who is known to us in film and on record, a person for whom there are photographs, there are people who knew him still walking around among us. Mm-hmm. When you do a biopic, even when it's sort of a pastiche of real and invented characters, as there are some liberties taken in the Born to Be Blue story, this is still a real person who had a real voice and a real sound and a real life experience.
But I'm not
him. You don't
him.
Do him. You, right, exactly. You don't do you imitation. Know, you didn't come on.
No,
to,
I mean, you know, you have to either buy onto the idea that it's interesting to make art of someone's life or it's not. And if you don't find that interesting, then no amount of imitation will do it. I mean, one of the things that I loved about this script was that it begins with this idea of a moment that is based in truth, which is Dino De Laurentiis approached Chet to play himself in his own life story. Now, in real life, Chet never – he screwed that up before it ever got to production. But this filmmaker imagined what if he did make a movie his own life? What if we made that movie? And so he was approaching me to play Chet Baker playing himself. And what I find so interesting about that is it allows Chet to say how fake all this is. And kind of undercut the whole idea of a biopic at all. There's a great book by Jeff Dyer called But Beautiful, where he imagines in different chapters lives of jazz greats. And I loved this book. And why I loved it was because it didn't give me – it's not like hitting the Wikipedia of John Coltrane. He got inside John Coltrane and imagined what it was like to be John Coltrane. And it was just fun, and I felt – John Coltrane's music alive in his writing. And what I wanted to do was go, all right, if I sat down and listened to 5 Chet Baker albums, I closed my eyes, what's the story I would see? What's the story that would, this movie should accomplish that goal for you, like just to download, you know, the myth and the legend. So I'm sure for people that love him and knew him, and he was a real person who walked the streets. But the good news is we live in 2016, and you can Google that, and you can see interviews with the real man, and you can read Wikipedia and find out exactly where he was born and what day, you know, this happened and that happened. My job becomes to make a substantive story and that has some – hopefully some meaning that's larger than just the facts, right?
But you know when – does that make sense? Absolutely. When Cary Grant plays Cole Porter – they swing around when he's sitting at the piano so that you don't ever see his hands as he's banging away at Night and Day. did you have to at least learn how to do a pretty good job of looking like a guy who was a trumpet player? Or did you already know something about how to play an instrument?
Well, I've been playing the guitar since I was a kid, but that doesn't help me play the trumpet, really. I mean, the thing that helped me the most, funnily enough, is I made a documentary last year called Seymour, An Introduction, which is a portrait of an 88-year-old piano maestro. And I spent a year or so editing this footage and really exploring something beautiful about the way a person has a relationship with an instrument and how they express themselves with an inanimate object that can be very beautiful. And so I wanted to get at that the most. What I try – I begged the director if we could actually just push production a year and give me a year of trumpet training. But my trumpet teacher then told me that if I had 8 years, I really wouldn't be good enough to play in the movie. And so what I did is I took about the 6 to 8 songs that I was responsible for playing on camera, and I tried to learn them. But what I just did is I just tried to learn the breathing and the fingering, right? And then I would just turn up the music, the playback of the guy who really played it in the movie, who plays beautifully. And And I just played along with him. You know, I put a damper on mine and I just tried to lose myself in the music like I was playing it and tried my best to do it right. And some beats I got right and some beats I got less so.
We're talking with actor Ethan Hawke about his new movie, Born to Be Blue, about jazz musician Chet Baker. And you can join the conversation. Did you ever see Chet Baker live? Buy his records? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We'll go out with Ethan Hawke as Chet Baker singing My Funny Valentine in the new film Born to Be Blue. I'm Ray Suarez in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? But don't change a hair for me. Not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine. Stay. Each day is Valentine's Day. This
is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking to actor Ethan Hawke about playing jazz musician Chet Baker in the new film Born to Be Blue. This is Chet Baker's Long Ago and Far Away. You can join the conversation. Have a question for Ethan Hawke on playing Chet Baker? Do we lose a vital piece of American culture as fewer people listen to jazz? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll go first to the banks of the Merrimack River, to Newburyport, Massachusetts. Dawn, welcome to On Point.
Oh, hi, Ray, and hi, Mr. Hawke. I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm Ray, and he's Mr. Hawke. Okay.
You can call me Ethan.
Anyway, I'm just so excited, Mr. Hawke. You're one of my favorite actors. Chet Baker is one of my favorite musicians, and I can't wait to see this movie. He's such a tragic figure, and you know, so there's something about the way he plays. I was just wondering if you had ever listened to Concierto de Aranjuez with Jim Hall.
I haven't, but now I want to.
Yes, you must.
Tell me about it.
It's about 11 minutes long, and it takes a classical music piece, and they do it in this lovely samba, soft kind of tempo. It's just, his phrasing is absolutely breathtaking. So
all right.
I just suggest that you listen to it. It's with Jim Hall, Chet Baker. I can't remember who else is on it.
I really want to now. All right, I will. Can I give you one recommendation? Can I give you one?
Yes.
Have you heard Chet sing Elvis Costello's Almost Blue on the Chet Live in Tokyo album?
No, I haven't. But
well,
I'll look
you for it. Have to. It's all the okay. adjectives you just used are yeah. applicable to this track too. Just the whole album is phenomenal, but that one song is so beautiful. And when I was preparing for this role, I got to meet Elvis Costello and ask him about recording with Chet, and you could feel the pride that Elvis had. Did you ever hear him play Almost Blue? And I said, I did. And I used to listen to that every I had the whole that Live from Tokyo performance I'd listen to every morning as I get dressed to work on this movie.
Dawn, thanks a lot.
Oh, well, great. I'll definitely listen to it. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Ethan, had you ever sung before an audience before, or did you ever sing in as a performer?
You know, I've different times in my life, you know, I did this movie Reality Bites where I played a singer-songwriter type and I sang, and I played another aspiring songwriter in Boyhood, and I sang a couple times in that movie. And I've done – I did a Shakespeare – I did A Winter's Tale with Sam Mendes directing at Brooklyn Academy of Music, and I sang about four songs in that production of A Winter's Tale. So I've done it before a little bit, but always with a guitar or piano, you know, not with the trumpet.
Because Chet Baker had a sort of light, almost pop sound, a very pleasing, sweet tenor voice. Again, here we are talking about the difference between portrayal and imitation. Did you feel like you had to capture the way Chet Baker sang, or you could just they're great standards from the American Songbook that he sang along with jazz favorites. How did you prepare for doing that on a movie?
Well, very carefully. One of the things I love about Chet's singing, there's a jazz critic that says Chet Baker isn't a singer. His when he sings, it's the memory of someone singing, and there's this amazing feeling you have when you watch Chet play or sing is that you feel like he might not live through the performance. It's so fragile. It's so delicate. It's like so like a candle that's just – it's beautiful but barely alive. And I thought that unlike – well, if I was being asked to play Billie Holiday or you know, Ella Fitzgerald, one of the great jazz vocalists – you know, that'd be very daunting because they have an incredible, iconic voice. What's Chet's powers is what he communicated, a loneliness, an emptiness, a fragility. And I thought that I could try to do that and that was more important. You know, he had this unbelievable high tenor that is actually a little flat that is I just could not duplicate. And the more I tried, the worse it sounded. So I tried to kind of go after the same spirit of what he was doing. I had to raise my voice through the whole movie. I did the whole performance an octave higher than I normally speak so that when I sang, it could be in at least a place that didn't feel totally wrong. So I don't know. I had a great vocal teacher and I tried my best. It was actually a lot more work. Chet, he makes his singing sound so effortless. It's all when he sings, it's so easy
yeah.
that I kind of thought maybe it would be easy to do, and it was anything but. The more I studied it, the more respect I had for how hard it is to be as simple as he is. You know, yeah. one of my favorite quotes about Chet is Wynton Marsalis was being very critical of Chet's playing and how kind of, you know, just simple and melodic it is, and it's not really jazz. And then Chet was told this and Wynton apparently said, well, if I could play like Wynton, I wouldn't, which I always thought was very funny and got to the point that Chet really – he tried to have absolutely no lies in his music, probably because his life was full of them. But in his music, he tried to have none. And so there's an utter stark simplicity to it all that is actually – really hard to achieve. It reminds me of like a Henri Matisse line drawing or something. It looks like a kid could do it, but you can't.
Jose is with us now from Marietta, Georgia. Jose, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. one question I had for you all. His singing is so iconic, you know, and I don't know much about the beginning of his career, but did his singing creep in after his drug use and stuff like that? I mean, that quality of his voice, I mean, if you take away the drug abuse and you take away the ability to play the trumpet, you wouldn't have Chet Baker's particular vocal style that he had. I mean, obviously being a trumpet player.
I can speak to that if you want, because it's actually a really interesting story. You know, he rose to prominence largely because he auditioned for and was selected by Charlie Parker to accompany Charlie Parker on a West Coast tour, and it was a life changing experience. And Charlie Parker is quoted as saying that Chet is the only person he ever met who could play his solos back for him, and that was one of the things that happened in the auditions. And part of the reason that was is that Chet also could not read music, that neither one of them read music, and they played completely by ear. So all Chet ever did was imitate what other people were playing. And this was Chet's intro to – I mean, it was – to have Charlie Parker pick you was like the keys to the bebop kingdom, to be taken seriously. And to be taken seriously as a white man was a tremendous – for a white kid who was in love with black music and black culture, this was a huge – I mean, you know, it was – for Chet, it was a giant thing. And he started playing with Jerry Mulligan, and they developed this West Coast sound that was very sweet and very melodic, and he rose to real fame. He started singing because, you know, he was missing his front tooth, and he always was worried about his embouchure. He had a weak mouth, and it would tire very easily, and he really liked to sing. He used to sing with his mom, and he thought he was good at it. And one of the things that's very interesting about his singing is he sings exactly like he plays, meaning that he's kind of just singing the notes. You know, he doesn't really put any emphasis on the words, on the literature of the song. He's literally in it. So there's this empty, hollow sound of really just a guy enjoying singing to give his mouth a rest. And later in life, you know, he was beaten up severely and lost all his teeth and had to play with dentures. And it was a terrible, you know, blow to him. It took him 10 years to really recover from that. And so singing was always a useful tool for him to give his mouth a rest.
I want to talk a little bit more about that defensiveness about being a white man in a black man's game. After playing a set in the film Born to be Blue, Chet Baker, played by Ethan Hawke, my guest, is introduced to Miles Davis, played by Kedar Brown. Miles Davis is stingy with his praise.
Chet, just wanted to say hi before you set, Miles.
This is Elaine.
How you doing?
You dig the show?
It was nice. Yeah. A lot of pretty phrases. It was, sweet. Like candy.
Miles Davis, certainly in the movie, apparently in Chet Baker's head. I need to know more about the backstory there, Ethan.
Well, there's lots of great stories there. I mean, let's face it, Miles Davis was a card-carrying genius and a true Renaissance man who changed music. Birth of the Cool changed everything, and you wouldn't have, you know, Chet Baker wouldn't even know what bebop was if, you know, not for Miles Davis. And so he was, you know, a living legend, and Chet was, you know, winning critics' polls as best trumpeter of the year, and it was very frustrating for Miles Davis because here's a guy who's imitating him, who's selling more records than him, you know, which would be frustrating. And he's just happens to be pretty and white and easier to market, which was upsetting. There's a great story about Miles showing up at the Lighthouse where Jerry Mulligan and Chet used to play. And Chet was so excited that Miles is coming, but Miles refused to play until they took all the Chet Baker 45s out of the jukebox and broke them. And to show you to what extent Chet admired Miles, Chet just laughed and said, "Great, can we still play?" you know, I mean, no matter what you think about me, I still just want to play with you. And he was always thinking and talking about Miles and You know, Miles really continued as jazz took hits. You know, Elvis is happening. The Beatles is happening. You know, the world is moving on from jazz. Miles stayed relevant because he was always musically so ahead of the curve. Whereas Chet was, you know, he never deviated from his 50s sound. You know, I mean, that was what he loved and that's what he did.
Ozzy is with us now from New York, New York. Ozzy, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Mr. Suarez and Mr. Hawk, you're both people I admire greatly in your fields of endeavor. What I wanted to mention is that, and get your reaction from it, is that there are so many other artists who have made their mark in our society, in our culture, for the most part. Charlie Hayden, Lee Morgan, Dizzy Gillespie, you mentioned Coltrane. And to choose a Chet Baker, and I know, Mr. Hawk, that it's you're not the one who came up with this idea to do the film. You're the great artist that you are, and you're participating in this film, and that's wonderful. But I want to get a reaction from you about from both of you, but you in particular, Mr. Hawk, why is it that we, the rest of the citizenry in this country, in this world, don't hear much about people like Lee Morgan or Charlie Hayden, who actually contributed to the canon, wrote great compositions?
Well, let's put that to Ethan Hawke, Ozzy. Why Chet Baker?
It's a phenomenal question. And, you know, it's really interesting. I was thinking a lot about this. You know, like with the success of the Amy Winehouse documentary, which is a very good documentary, but it kind of propels this myth that a serious artist like lights themselves on fire and can't recover from their demons, and their demons lead their life. And part of what makes Chet so interesting is how he abused himself. And I wish people often come to me and they say, why is it that all jazz musicians are junkies, and why are all great artists so self-hating? And you think, Dizzy Gillespie is a better jazz musician than Chet Baker by any, you know, if we're going to, you know, I hate judging people against each other, but he made a much more significant contribution, Dizzy did. And he was a great man and a great leader in his community, and he helped others, and he's a husband and a father. And for me, you're just right. You know, it makes the Hank Williamses of the world, the Jimi Hendrix of the world get biopics, because their story's a little more dynamic. You know, it's very hard to make a movie about a successful marriage. You know, almost to the point that we don't think one exists. You know, a man and a woman who love each other lifelong does not make a good movie. It's full of the minutiae and the difficult daily life work that it takes to make something work. And you bring up, you know, Think about it. Willie Nelson has a new album this year, and I love to think about this. This guy's in his 80s, right? He's doing a jazz album of Gershwin classics. He's reinterpreting. He does it beautifully. He is one of our great songwriters. He is one of our great guitarists. And he's just continually working all the time. And I admire that so much more than I do the kind of drama of the artist who sets himself on fire. So I wish I am responsible. In a way, you very kindly let me off the hook. I am responsible. Every actor is responsible. When I agree to do the movie, you know, it helps it get made. And I find that the story is worthwhile, but that I wish there were also more movies like the ones you're talking about.
Ozzy, thanks a lot for your call from New York City. We're talking with actor Ethan Hawke about playing jazz musician Chet Baker in the new film Born to be Blue. You can join the conversation, Can the Stories of Jazz Musicians? Ethan Hawke as Chet Baker, Don Cheadle in a new movie as Miles Davis. Make people listen again to jazz music. Is there an opportunity there? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We'll go out with Chet Baker's Happy Little Sunbeam. I'm Ray Suarez, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
this On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace helps you showcase every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. Squarespace.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with actor Ethan Hawke about his new film, Born to be Blue, about jazz musician Chet Baker. We're listening to Baker now with Carson City Stage. You can join the conversation. What's your question for Ethan Hawke about his career in film, about Chet Baker? We're at 800-423-8255. You can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, at On Point Radio. We are getting some feedback from our social media community. Here's a comment from our website. I love Chet Baker, one of my favorite jazz musicians, and Ethan Hawke is a fine actor. I can't wait to see the film. Also from our website, Tyler writes, if we're tossing out listening recommendations, I consider the album The Touch of Your Lips to be essential. A drumless trio of Chet, a 17-year-old Doug Rainey on guitar, and Niels Henning Ørsted Pedersen on bass. Stunningly understated and beautiful, and I believe a less-known gem of an album. And from Twitter, Steve asks, Chet was a very hot player for much of his career. Do we get to hear that in the movie, or is the movie romanticized? When someone's got such a big catalog, Ethan Hawke, how do you figure out what to use and what not? Because you have to drive the story along with showing trumpet playing.
You know, it's a good question. For me, the high water mark for movies about real people, you know, is always Raging Bull. And one of the things that makes Raging Bull so exceptional is that you don't need to know who Jake LaMotta is. You don't need to know about boxing for the movie to have immense power. It's taking a man's life and their work and telling a story with it that has a larger meaning that you can draw from. Boxing is as a metaphor for life, and Jake is as a human person that we relate to or are disgusted by or drawn to or whatever our reaction is, that it has power. And so if you think too literally about trying to encompass all of Chet's work, you're not going to tell a story. You have to kind of focus. It's a little bit like, you know, if you make a ballet of somebody's life, you're making art out of it. What's wonderful about the books I read about Chet and even listening to the songs you're playing here in the space, some of them I know, some of them I don't, I'm always hit by the scope of actually his work. And yes, for a lot of entry point jazz lovers, you know, the vocals and the romantic stuff he did is the first thing that people are drawn to. But he can play blisteringly hot, and he's a beautiful musician that has a lot of gems out there. He also has some mediocre work. He did so much over the course of his life that it's all over the place. But there's no way the movie's going to cover it all. So we had to hit music that spoke to our story and what we were trying to communicate.
Ethan Hawke is in New York. Joining me now from Boston is Joe Hunt. He's a jazz drummer, educator, author, and historian. His jazz group is the Joe Hunt Quintet. He's a former Berklee School of Music professor. He's taught jazz ensemble at the New England Conservatory, and he performed with Chet Baker in Newport in 1964, one of the world's great jazz festivals. Joe Hunt, great to have you with us. What do you want people to know about Chet Baker?
Well, first of all, hi, Ray, and hi, Ethan. And I got a little preview of the film yesterday, and in the middle of rehearsing a busy day, I kind of raced through it, and my initial impression was, well, here's another jazz film that's not very realistic. And hearing Ethan speak just today on the show, I'm really anxious to see the film again and with new eyes and a new perspective, because some of your comments, Ethan, I think are really, really stunning, you know, about character studies and film in general, and your analogy, or your example, rather, of the Raging Bull and so on, because it's different than sometimes you have to bend the facts a little bit, I suppose, to make a story. And anyway, I can speak about my experience with Chet. Ethan's body language was uncanny. It was it could have been Chet Baker. And as I remember him, we only crossed paths once at the Newport Jazz Festival in 1964. I was working with Stan Getz, this great saxophonist. And by the way, another thing Ethan said, which I think is really important, is that kind of universal simplicity of Baker's musical style, that anybody can kind of get that. And Stan Getz had that same wonderful immediacy and simpleness in his playing. You could always hear the melody, you know. Well, anyway, they played together, and I was the drummer, so it was really quite a treat for me musically to play with them. And by the way, it was recorded, and there's a CD of it, a Spanish CD, Stan Getz, Newport 64. Anyway, Chet pulled up in a sports car, driven by a beautiful woman, a model maybe, and they pulled right up to the bandstand. And I'm kind of talking a lot. Is this okay?
No, it's great.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of a funny story. So, I mean, I'd never seen Chet live before. I was a big fan. I had his records and stuff, and never played with him. And Stan's group, we were on the bandstand, and this car pulls up. We're about ready to play, and this beautiful girl gets out. She was driving the car, and she goes around to the side, and she opens the door for Chet. Chet gets out, and then she goes to the back seat and holds his trumpet, and they both come up on the bandstand, and she carries his trumpet for him. It was quite a scene, you know, kind of a showstopper. And this is before he even played, you know. So then she puts the trumpet down, and he gets out of the case and warms up, and he and Stan talk, and then we start. We play. But that was quite an entrance, you know, a show-stopping entrance. Very
that
memorable. And he played great. It was pretty clear he was high, and, you know, he was feeling no pain. And but he played wonderfully, and he sang a song, But Not For Me. That was the song he sang. He sang beautifully. He had his own pianist who came up on the stage, too, because Phil Urso, who's actually a great tenor saxophonist, but he played piano that day. Chet had him ready to accompany him.
You know, beautiful. Joe, you mentioned that it was apparent to you that he was high, and I'm always shocked, as someone who has been a dabbler as an instrumentalist, and I can read music, and I've been part of music groups. The idea that I could do anything while drunk or stoned just seems so far-fetched, and yet some of the most beautiful music ever recorded, you hear afterwards, oh yeah, the person was high as a kite. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I had the great good fortune of playing with the pianist Bill Evans for a year. I toured with him, and Bill had a serious heroin addiction. And one time he spoke of it to me, and I didn't make much sense of it at the time, but if I reflect, he said something about it's sort of like an obstacle that you have to crash through, and in crashing through, you know, you can find a sort of certain success. I want to be careful quoting Bill, but he had some kind of a cockeyed theory about maybe an excuse for using, I don't know. But, well, you know, it's, there's some truth to that, I guess.
Ethan, your Chet Baker goes, I'm not sure toward the end whether it's insecurity or self-knowledge that drives him back to the needle in order to play a high threshold, important gig at the end of the movie.
That's kind of interesting what you say. Sometimes people need an obstacle. Like I mean, human psychology and what drives addiction and what starts it, what continues it, sometimes are different things, and it's a riddle. But I do know, I always think about, this might sound incongruous at first, but I always think about, it was a basketball game I watched once, you know, a very famous basketball game where Michael Jordan had the flu and he played amazing. And I really understood sometimes I've done a bunch of Shakespeare in my life, and sometimes when you're sick, you play better. It gives you this absolute laser focus where you're just trying to get through the show. I remember several times in my life having different problems I was even trying to hide from my castmates. And it gave me kind of a laser precision not to worry about anything else. And I was just trying to live through that performance. And I don't know. It's very mysterious to me. Just like you, I don't even want to pontificate any answers because they all kind of make sense and don't make sense at the same time.
But in the go ahead, Joe.
Back in on the idea of the drug use or alcohol use and all that, I think it's, pointed out in this film, for that matter, that Chet, he wanted to play his music no matter what. And I think the drug and the alcohol business is really incidental. Generally, the art comes through no matter what. I mean, that's my own personal opinion.
And look, there's a great. I remember when I was a kid, I worked with Robin Williams, and he used to say that, he thought cocaine made him funny, and he didn't realize that he was funny despite cocaine.
Right.
That there's this God-given talent, right, that resides inside all of us at various different things, and it's gonna come out.
Exactly.
It's our own neuroses and insecurity about how we get through our life, but in my talking with different people about Chet and my reading, I recognized a lot of things. He loved to play, and his heroes were all junkies. What did he care? He wanted to be an outlaw. He wanted a jazz life. Didn't really see it as a problem. There's a great interview where he gets mad. I put it in the movie as somebody talks about Billie Holiday dying, as from heroin, and he says she didn't die from heroin. She died from cops. If they just let her play her music and take her medicine and not take away her club card, she would be fine. The problem is cops. And I just thought that was kind of insightful as to how he viewed the whole thing.
It's also kind of funny when toward the end of the movie, he makes it clear to a promoter manager that he hasn't been taking the methadone that's helping him control his heroin habit. And the guy says, well, I'll just go out in the club and get some, because in a room full of jazz musicians, there's bound to be some methadone. The idea that the use, Joe Hunt, was so widespread is mystifying.
Yeah, well, it was. And then Ethan makes the point that Chet's heroes were all junkies. We're talking 50s now, early 50s, maybe late 40s, and that's the way it was back then. That was a generation before me. But, it's still leaked into my generation as well. But in the 50s, man, it was prevalent,
There was a tremendous amount of morphine left after the war. This is, if you kind of do a little research into it, it's kind of interesting. It's just all this morphine produced, and they were just kind of funneling it into the ghettos. And it was a lot more prevalent, and a lot of people thought it was kind of magical and mystical. And it wasn't. I think when they were all first in the 50s in the bebop scene, they're chipping and doing the kind of experimenting with it. It had a kind of fun renegade feel to it, and before all the corpses started showing up.
Right, right.
It eventually killed him, right, Ethan?
Well, he died, in Amsterdam. His death is kind of a question mark, exactly like his life. He's an enigma. I mean, he fell from a window in his Amsterdam hotel room. He was high. Whether he just fell because he was stoned or whether he fell because he was pushed out, some people think there was a dealer in the room who kicked him out. Some people think he committed suicide. Some people, he thinks he was just stoned and enjoying the window and fell out. I've even heard a rumor that he was locked out of his room and he tried to climb in through the window from the elevator path and fell. But regardless, He died high in Amsterdam on the street.
As a fairly young man, 58, perhaps maybe then it wasn't seen as young as it is today, but there was a lot of life left if you took care of yourself.
Well, he's playing music at a very high level. You know, as I mentioned, that Live in Tokyo album was just a few months before, and it's just some phenomenal music there.
Joe Hunt, do you hope that the new jazz movies, because a new biopic coming out about Miles Davis with Don Cheadle, that this movie, Born to be Blue, featuring Ethan Hawke, might get some people interested in the music again?
Well, it might. That would be good if it did. We certainly need some help. Those of us who are still playing jazz in clubs, you know, my audiences when I play here in Boston have really thinned out, and there's not a great deal of interest these days among young people for jazz.
How do you explain that?
So yeah, there's a maybe that will help. Yeah.
What do you think happened? I mean, this is an American art form. Why do you think nobody's listening?
Well, it's a good question. I have some theories, but it would take a while to present them. I guess quickly I could say some of the great talent, you know, like Chet and the great masters, Miles and Bill Evans and these, you know, the wonderful, amazing musicians of the 60s, they're all gone now, and they were giants, you know, and there are no giants coming up to fill those shoes. There are some wonderful young musicians, of course, but no one so profound as those people that we had before. And so, you know, we miss them, and that's part of the problem, I guess.
That's jazz drummer, educator, author, and historian Joe Hunt. He joined me from Boston. Ethan Hawke plays Chet Baker in the new film Born to be Blue. Great to talk to you, Ethan.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
You can continue the conversation and get On Point as a podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We go out with a live performance of Chet Baker playing Made in Mexico. I'm Ray Suarez, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.